Welcome to the Be Loud About What Matters podcast. I'm Olivia, your host. On this podcast, I will be bringing light to topics that are important but not discussed enough within our society. Episodes will include a range of topics, starting with the journey to conceive, pregnancy, birth, postpartum and motherhood, holistic healing and nutrition, and the importance of true informed consent and medical freedom. The goal of this podcast is to create connections, share stories, information, and resources to educate and empower people in their own personal journey. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to this week's episode of the Be Loud About What Matters podcast. This week, I have a guest on who I connected with on Instagram. We realized that we shared a lot of common views and we just started chatting. So, Isaac, welcome to the podcast. Could you share a little bit about you?
Yes. Really what I am all about is a holistic approach to pain management. And the story that got me here was just kind of going through my own pain journeys. We're based out of Columbus, Ohio. And so my journey kind of started in high school, played sports, went to college, played sports, and never really focused on taking care of myself or taking care of my body. Mm-hmm. And it led me down the path of just trying to heal myself. And in the process, I learned a lot of really, really cool things on the way. So I have a daughter. She is almost 8 months. Dog, cat. So yeah, that's a little bit background on me, who I am, where I come from. That's the short version, right?
Yeah. Yeah, I find that most people who I've talked to on the podcast and off the podcast really just come to their own journey, but like what they want to do, what sets their souls on fire because of whatever has happened to them in their life. So
yeah,
it's not surprising.
Yeah. Call it maybe like the pain teacher, right? It's like, you know, these things come into your life to challenge you and ultimately kind of shape the direction that your life goes in.
Yeah.
I think that's always like, as you get older, it's like you realize the power of the things that kind of happen to you, and
yeah,
you start to use them. It turns into those things happening to you, to those things creating opportunities for you.
Yes. Right? That's what I say all the time. I'm like, if these things are happening, they're a beautiful opportunity to do something.
Absolutely.
Cause I was talking to someone recently and we were kind of talking about the whole victim mindset and I mean, obviously you have empathy and compassion and at some point in your life, you have felt badly about yourself and you're like, why is this always happening to me? And so it's like, you can sit there and you can think that, or you could be like, okay, this happened to me. And now what? What am I going to do mm-hmm. with what happened mm-hmm. to me? Am I going to stay Absolutely. Stuck or am I going to do something and change mm-hmm. my own life, help others, that sort of thing? So mm-hmm. it's powerful.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. It reminds me of a quote. I'm kind of a geek and kind of a nerd, and I like to watch some anime cartoons here and there.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me of a quote. There's so many one-liner quotes that just like are so profound in anime. And the quote is, "There's nothing wrong with being weak, but there is something wrong with staying weak."
Yeah.
Right. And it's just this component of, there's nothing wrong with being down. There's nothing wrong with having things that kind of like pile up on top of you and kind of feel like they're getting the better of you.
Yeah.
Nothing wrong with that. It's going to happen to everybody.
Right.
But there is a problem with just like staying there and letting that be who you are.
Yeah.
Like, you got to just like keep your feet moving. It doesn't need to be drastic. You just got to keep your feet moving in the right direction.
Right. Not letting it define you.
Exactly.
Yeah. It exactly. is. I mean, that is powerful. One-liners can be real powerful, no matter they where are, they come right? from.
Absolutely.
There's this song from the show that my daughter likes to watch, and it's like, you got to keep on trying. It's like a song about not giving up, and I'm like, these kids mm-hmm. shows, like, they know what they're talking about, so.
For sure, absolutely.
But yeah, could you tell us a bit about, like, what you do for work and where your journey has brought you?
Yeah, sure, absolutely. So we'll take a step back and kind of backtrack a little bit because that'll help give a little bit more context as to why I do exactly what I do.
So, okay.
As I mentioned, I was a football player, played in high school mm-hmm. and went on to play in college a couple years as well. And football is just a very, it's a very physical sport, right? No, it's no mystery there.
Yeah.
It's very physical and I kind of beat myself up. And the whole concept of football, as you're training at least, And maybe this is different other places, but this is how it was at our place was bigger, faster, stronger. Bigger, faster, stronger. Bigger, faster, stronger. So when that's all you're talking about, health and kind of longevity and recovery and feeling good, there's no priority there, right? And, so it's you kind of put sideline all that to become bigger, faster, stronger. And so I dug myself into a hole of becoming very, very stiff, very tight. And when you're young, you can get away with things like that. But even as I was just getting, out of college at 22, my body was just banged up. I was so stiff. I was dealing with low back pain, neck pain, headaches. My shoulders, I had no range of motion. And, I went straight from doing that into an office job, which, the body likes to move. And if the body can't move, it's going to lose the capacity to do so. And so as I'm sitting in a desk for, 8 to 10 hours, my body just, I was trying to push myself like be a weekend warrior, but my body just could not handle it and couldn't keep up. And so things just started to, the wheels kind of started to fall off. I started to deal with really bad hip pain, really bad knee pain because of the hip.
So
My
just
shoulders,
pain
they,
everywhere.
yeah. Yeah, I was just, it was just, I was a struggle bus, and I was like 22, 24. And I knew that there had to be like another way to do it. And I would go and I would reach out to different people, and I got a lot of really good advice. And I'm so thankful that I found the people that I found. But it's almost like, think about if you had a really, really serious condition going on, and you went and you saw a doctor about it. And the doctor, this one doctor says, oh, it's this, this, and this. And you're like, okay, I didn't think it could have been that. Let me go see another doctor. And they go see another doctor, and it's like it's this, this, and this. It's in there completely different, right? And eventually, you're like, "Oh crap!" It's like I could probably go see five other people, and probably I'm going to get five other, diagnostics. People are going to tell me five other things, and so it's like, okay, I guess I got to just learn this stuff myself, but do the best too, and be, in the doctor scenario, it's probably not the best scenario because it can get a little technical, but along those same lines, it's like, okay, here's why your back's hurting. Here's why your hips hurting. Here's why this is hurting. Da 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 da. And I was just getting so much information, I didn't know what to do with it, right? So I was like, okay, well, I guess I gotta start learning this stuff. And so I started to branch out. I started to become a personal trainer first, which just led me into kind of learning more about the muscular system and about the body. That's the thing about athletes is like many athletes have a very good idea of how to move their body. Very good idea of how to do these things while they might not understand or really have any concept of anatomy or myology, which is the study of muscles, or even, just basic physiology, right? We just kind of do. And that's its own sort of intelligence, being able to just do and move your body. It's like an internal intelligence. But as you go to try to solve these problems, you got to get a little bit of that external intelligence as well. So becoming a personal trainer, I felt like was the first step to me actually learning. Okay, what do I need to focus on? Yeah, I know that a squat works my legs because every time I do a squat, I go to the next day, I can't sit down without my hamstrings and my butt and my quads hurting. So I know that, but where are, how are they playing a role? Why is it more hamstrings sometimes, more quads sometimes, more glutes, more quads? And so that was the initial step into, okay, let me start to learn this stuff a little bit better. As I started to train clients, I started to realize not only was I in pain, but my clients were in pain as well. And they would always ask me questions. Isaac, there's my shoulder here. Isaac, this is going on here. And I didn't have the answers for them. So I was referring out to a lot of people. And I was just like, at the same time, okay, here I am. I'm still struggling. I'm learning a little bit. Now I have my clients who are coming in. And yeah, I'm trying to push them to get stronger, but they're struggling a little bit. Their back's hurting. Their neck's hurting. All right, what else can I do? What else? How else can I learn to better serve myself and my clients? I was like, at that point in time, I was very kind of wrapped up in the medical paradigm that, the allopathic mainstream Western medicine. So I was like, all right, maybe physical therapy, right? That's the first thing that came to mind. All right, maybe I should go to physical therapy school and learn some physical therapy, make that my avenue of my career. But I just gotten out of college. I saw what my student debt was already looking like.
I was gonna say.
And so I was like, I don't know about going in. I don't know. Like, that's so much more student debt. Mind you, I just quit my job that I went to college for.
Right.
So it's like I got all this debt for a job that I didn't even want to stick with. And
I
I'm
know.
Like, what if that happens again? You know, I was like, oh gosh. And so you're looking at, you know, becoming a doctor, getting a doctorate in physical therapy. You know, I don't know, but it's, I'm gonna say at least $70,000.
Oh,
I'm just gonna ballpark and say at least
it's
70,
crazy.
Probably more.
Yeah.
Probably more. And I was like, I don't know about that. That's a lot of money. And, you know, that's, I just almost feel like digging myself into that hole.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I started to reach out and meet some people and some really, really smart neuromuscular therapists. Mm-hmm. And they put me onto the idea that you can do almost everything that a physical therapist can do, depending on what you want to do with your work.
Like specialty wise.
You could do. Yeah, exactly. There's a lot of things you could do with what you want. Like I described what I want to do. I just want to help people get out of pain and move better, feel better, get in, loosen up tissues, get joints to move a little bit more free.
Right.
And you're like, you can do that with, you know, a certified personal trainer, which you already have, and becoming a massage therapist, LMT. And I was like, oh, okay. So I started looking at LMT. It's like $10,000 to become an LMT for that school. I was like, okay, that's something that I can kind of, I can work with. I
yeah.
had the same money. So I was like, that's all out of pocket. It's not going to like run me into debt. So I, you know, that's what led me into massage therapy. And as soon as I got hands on bodies, it was just like, you know, it just, I knew that's where I was supposed to be. Like I was just so good at it. I enjoyed it.
It felt right.
I'm very built. It felt right. I'm very muscular as well. And, you know, my joints don't bend, they don't move. So I had a lot of like in classes where people were like, oh, my fingers are hurting. I'd be like, I was just, you know, I was massaging away, no problem at all.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I knew that I had found something that I could stick with and that I had found something that I was going to be a little bit more, that I was going to be passionate about.
Yeah.
And not only that, right, there's some selfish reasons there as well, because now I can take everything I'm learning in massage therapy school and apply it to myself.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, you know, and I know it's, like, it's, it all guided me towards where I am today. And that's, you know, like what we talked about before, it's like these things come into your life and they help show you the opportunities of where you can give your gifts to the fullest.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so that's kind of my background in massage therapy. That's taken me even out elsewhere into more the holistic side of things, right? Because,
yeah,
you know, there's so much more to health than just the physical.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, just taking care of muscles and joints and working out, like there's so much more to it. And I realized that I was leaving a lot of progress on the table because I wasn't able to give my clients not only the tool that, so it's like the tools that the body needs, right? There's a quote in ancient traditional Chinese medicine,
mm-hmm.
where they say, you know, man assists but nature heals.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was assisting, but I wasn't giving them the things that their body needed to heal, such as maybe focusing on sleep,
right,
or
right, right.
nutrition,
right.
or even mindset and thoughts, right? We talked about the victim mentality. People don't realize that the words that you use create how you experience life.
Yeah.
And so there's so much going on where
it's
people are telling this story. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so layered, and that's what I've learned being in like the holistic space for, I don't know, 5-6 years now, that there are so many layers to what your health actually entails. And so many people don't realize that, like what you were talking about, you have yourself and your clients who you were working out and you were thought you were doing all the right things, but there were other bits and pieces that you weren't making a priority that also mattered in your overall health. And the other thing too that I think is also really important and I always mention is that health is super individualized. And so yeah. like when you were talking about going to different doctors who are like throwing diagnoses at you, it's one of my biggest pet peeves is when people like I just don't even like the diagnosis I don't like that because I think that puts people into a box. It's a label. It's like, this is what is wrong with you, and here's what's going to make you better. Or you have this amount of time, and then your health is going to decline. And you're talking about mindset. That impacts your mindset so much. If you
Absolutely.
were like, I don't know what's going on with me, and then you go to a doctor and they diagnose you with this horrible whatever, then that's in your mind. And so
Absolutely.
there's so many layers to health, and it's so important. And I love that you took a deep dive into them, and you could apply it to your own life, and you can help your clients because it opening up these conversations is huge. People don't realize why pain is stored in their body, whether it's from a past trauma to their body or mentally, emotionally. There's so many different things.
Absolutely. I love that. And, as you said that too, it made me think, right? It's like there is so much more to it. There is, it's so layered on one on top of the other. And when you think about what's all going into it, a one-dimensional approach really never gets you as far as a multi-pronged, comprehensive
Like the big
approach.
picture.
The big picture, absolutely. And how you said it, right? The diagnosis, it becomes a part of people. Like if I look up to somebody and I think this person is like knows their stuff and is like very, very, it's almost like I'll say God just because it's just like it puts you, it kind of paints the picture of what where I'm trying to go. But when you outsource your health, you're almost looking to doctors as if they're gods. And if a god tells you that you have this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, you're gonna believe them. And you're gonna fully absorb and take that on to the point of which it might be hard for you to heal until you hear that doctor say that you can heal. So but if they don't give you that, if they don't give that to you, then you're gonna believe that there's nothing that you can do. And so there's a lot of responsibility on physicians and practitioners to be very careful about the language that they use.
Oh, absolutely.
That's something I have a big issue with a lot of, and I think chiropractors are great, but I have a big issue with so many chiropractors just because of the they use very provocative language.
Like what?
So like, oh, you're like it's always, oh, we have a bulging disc,
Oh,
right?
okay.
And you start to say things like bulging disc or this is out of place or you have a popped rib, right? That's very provocative language. And people hear that, they're like, oh, something's really, really wrong. And that can make their experience worse. And there's ways that we can tell them that, yes, like, okay, so we're noticing, some things going on in your back here. Bulging, but does this say bulging disc, right? It seems like it's a diagnosis, right? And people immediately imagine a bulging disc with damage. And when people think damage, which isn't always the case, right? There's a lot of research out there that show that there's people who aren't in pain yet have discs that are bulging. So what is the difference between, having a disc that's bulging and these people are completely fine? I think some of the research out there suggests that up to 50% of the people out there have undiagnosed herniated discs that
Oh,
are asymptomatic.
I didn't
Yeah,
know
they're
that.
not they're, they don't feel anything, right? And there's this idea in my line of work of trying to help people feel better. The more I tell people that something is wrong, the more money they will give me, right? So there's this like fine line. If I tell somebody, if somebody came into my door and I told them that they had this wrong, this wrong, this wrong, and I could help them out, they'd get out the checkbook and they'd write as much as as they need. Now,
Well, that's kind of like the God complex you were just talking about.
yeah, right. And people like to feel, or that I shouldn't say people like to feel, there's this when people feel like you can fix them, they're like, oh, you can fix me? Okay, well, I'll do whatever I have to do for you to fix me. And which goes back to what we talked about before. It's like Man Assists, That Nature Heals. There's a phenomenal book called The Body Electric by a
Oh.
guy named Robert Becker.
Okay.
And basically, he was a surgeon. And going through that book, he kind of illustrates his journey. And it's a really fascinating journey because, there's this age-old kind of battle between vitalism, which believes at the end of the day there's some vital force that controls everything that might not be explained, be able to be explained, versus mechanism. So mechanism and vitalism go kind of like they're kind of contrary to each other. Mechanism thinks that everything can be explained in terms of mechanics. There's a mechanism for everything, as opposed to vitalism, which thinks that there's some vital force that kind of governs the flow of life, right, of existence. And we're in a very mechanistic kind of stage here, which it started to take over more and more as we got into that. I can't remember exact years, but when Descartes and his pain theory, his model of pain and things like that really shifted an era of vitalism versus mechanism. And I might be mixing up some of my terminology here, but the point I'm trying to make is that Robert Becker realized that, okay, what I can do really is limited. What I need to be focusing on is, yes, making sure that my surgeries are on point, because he was a surgeon. He was going in and he was doing, surgery. He had to make sure that he was precise with the surgery. But at the same time, he realized that even more important than that was creating a connection with his patients, creating trust with his patients so that they felt safe and then that they could go about their way and nature would naturally heal. The surgeon doesn't make anything heal. He might cut some things, put some things together, and take some things out, but ultimately it comes down to whether or not the body is going to respond and heal itself from that. And
Well,
you know, I yeah.
I think what you're saying makes complete sense because I think one of the biggest things that I've realized, because you're talking about doctors and surgeons, is that a lot of people, I don't know if it's like a want, but they believe that one medication is going to solve all their problems, or they believe that one treatment is going to solve everything, or that the doctor can save them. And I hate to break it to anybody listening, but it's not just going to be the fix-all. Like, you have to genuinely have a relationship, have trust, and understand that your body is capable of healing. And yes, like you said, there are certain times where there is a necessary surgery or something along those lines, or something that can be used as a tool, but it's not going to be the end all fix all. So there, you have to have the understanding of this is what I have going on. This might be able to help me. I might be able to use this as a tool. And ultimately, at the end of the day, I have to take responsibility for my health too. And a lot of people don't want to do that.
Yeah,
But
it's hard work, right? Like life is
yeah.
hard work. It just takes time,
Yeah.
and people don't want to take time. They're busy. They're so busy doing whatever they have to do. They don't have to take the time to read an ingredient label, or
Yeah.
figure out what's going on with their body, or learn about the healing properties of such and such, and what they can do to help themselves. It just
Yeah.
takes time.
Yeah, I mean, it ties back into what you were saying earlier when you were talking about when you were playing football and you were like, I just wasn't making this a priority. You
No.
know, like, and a lot of the time it takes people being injured or unwell for them to make their health a priority.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
it's also in part due to just like how our society is set up here in America. So
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's not much incentive. There's not much incentive from the powers that be for us to be healthy,
yeah,
right?
exactly.
Right? It's like they kind of have, are making a lot of money off of us being really sick. And until that changes, which I think I'm not a doomsday person. I think that like a lot of really good things are on the horizon. And I mean, I think we've gone down a very, very scary kind of path, and the trajectory looks even scarier. But I do think that we are on the path of realizing, oh, we have to do something here and now about what's going on. Otherwise, it's not going to be us that really it affects. It's going to be the world that and the life that our children inherit. And people are like, okay, let's start doing something about this now.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. I think the more conversations that we have about these things, the more like conversations we open up with other people. Because I was actually talking to someone the other day, and it's like if you grew up and all you knew was traditional medicine, for example, I've said it on the podcast before, I don't remember the last time, but like my mom, I grew up with my mom being a nurse. My dad worked in big pharma for 30 years. And I am literally like the black sheep of the family who's like, I'm
Yeah,
all
that's
set
true.
with everything.
Yeah.
But if that's all you know, it takes someone in your life to be like, no, wait, hold on. We can try this. We can try this. You can use this herb for that, you know? You can move your body this way. So I feel like it'd be a really good time to kind of segue into restorative exercise because that's one of the your main passions, right? So, would you tell
So,
us about that? And I don't know
yeah.
how many people are familiar with it. I know about functional movements and that sort of thing,
Sure.
but I'd love to hear more about it.
And, I think there's a lot of room to pair functional with restorative. And that's a, let's talk about that real fast. What is functional exercise? It's a word that's used quite a bit, right? What is like functional exercise? Functional exercise. What is functional exercise? Well, functional exercise, by definition, is anything that helps you do the functions of everyday life that you need to do. Right? That might look different for a skateboarder versus a football player or a basketball player versus somebody who's equestrian doing the sports like that. So looking at the profile of the exercise and, let's say like, so we're talking about a skateboarder. Skateboarder is working on on a skateboard that moves underneath them. Right, so that their profile of the reflexes that they're using, they're always doing a like kind of a riding reflex or a tilting reflex. So that as things move underneath them, they are kind of tilting themselves to absorb forces in certain ways so that they can maintain their balance versus a football player, well, the ground's not moving at all. So that their reflex profile is going to be more of a riding reflex profile. So a functional exercise for a skateboarder is not going to be the same thing that's going to be a functional exercise for a football player. Same thing for a power lifter versus granny, right? Granny is trying to lift a bag of flour. Power lifter is trying to lift, 1,000 pounds. So what's functional for one is not going to be functional for the other. And that is, I think, where we can kind of mix in functional with restorative, because let's take a squat for instance. A squat is a very functional exercise, but it can also be a very restorative exercise if we are highlighting certain details of the movement. And so restorative exercise is going to be something by definition, right, that is restoring something that might have been lost or something that they never had. So let's look at like joints, for instance. My shoulder, if I can't get my shoulder up very, very high as I'm going to go above my head, if it gets stuck before I can get it above my head, I know that I'm missing range of motion in my shoulder. So I can now do certain exercises that might work the rib cage, that might challenge the scapula to move a little bit different, the shoulder blade to move a little bit different. And eventually, as I start to do these exercises, I'm going to be able to restore myself to full range of motion of now being able to get my arm up in line with my ear. So that's a perfect example of restoring and looking at, what joint limitations might be restricting how well I can move. Another aspect of that is coordination. So sometimes in coordination in a way of like how are things working together? Muscles need to, it's important to remember that the brain doesn't really understand muscles. It doesn't think in muscles. The brain doesn't think, okay, move the bicep and do this, or move the calf and do this. It understands programs. So programs or motor programs are like sequences of neurons that'll fire together to create specific movements. Okay, I'll say that one more time. Motor program is like a sequence of like neurons and neuromuscular pathways that that create a certain movement. And that's how the brain thinks. It thinks in movements, in terms of movements. So, and just like anything, the brain wants to be efficient. And so you have what's called the law of facilitation, which means as a pathway travels a given set of neurons or a given set of, let me think of a different way to say this without sounding so technical, a given set of commands, the more it follows this set of commands and exclusion of other commands, the easier it gets to go down that command list.
Okay.
And I like to describe this as let's say that the brain is a forest, right? And so an untouched forest, no paths in the forest.
Okay.
As you walk through the forest, it's going to be that first time you go through the forest, it's going to be difficult. You know, you're going to be hacking and pulling plants out of the way. You're not going to be able to go very fast, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's no path in the forest. But as each time you walk over that, it creates more and more of a path. It creates a little bit easier. You know, you're knocking down brush and you're creating, you know, a little bit wider opening. You're able to get through it better and better and better. Eventually, as you've gone down that path enough, you have a full-blown hiking path. You could sprint down that path if you needed to, right? Because mm-hmm. you've kind of created this pathway.
Yeah.
Well, it's very similar in the brain and creating neural pathways that that spark different movements. And it's muscle memory in a sense, right? That is muscle memory. The more you do something, the better you get at it.
Yeah.
And you might not even do it for a long time, and then you come back and do it, and you can still do it because you've created the path. Because
your body remembers.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So now, let's say that the path that we've created isn't taking us to the destination that we want to get to. So we're going down this path, and yet what we want to do is just a little bit off the path, yet in order for me to get there, what am I going to have to do? I'm going to have to go through the forest again and start hacking away and creating a new pathway there. So we talked about kind of starting from scratch and creating something in a forest that's kind of been untouched. That will be akin to creating a new motor program.
Mm-hmm.
So to create a new motor program, let's say I'm teaching somebody how to lunge.
Mm-hmm.
Creating a new motor program only takes about 300 to 500 repetitions until they're like, oh, okay, I got this. 300 to 500 repetitions.
Okay.
Now, if I created that path, and I know I might be getting a little in the weeds. I'm sorry to you guys if you're having a hard time following. If I'm used to going down that path, but now I want to get off that path because maybe that path is leading to wear and tear in my joints. I didn't put much thought behind it, and so it's just not very structurally sound, or I'm not activating the right muscles how I would like to. You know, I might evaluate somebody's lunge, be like, okay, we need to switch this and switch that.
Yeah.
So now there's a different destination in the forest. It's hard to get the body to want to go back into the woods. It's almost always going to default going back to that hiking path, the path that they've already created.
Right.
So we talked about how much it takes. It takes 300 to 500 reps to create a new a new motor program. It takes 3,000 to 5,000 repetitions to break an old motor program in order to find a new program.
Oh, wow.
So
there's a difference.
So we're looking at a big difference, right? Mm-hmm. Almost, you know, 10 times as many reps as it takes to break an old pattern with a new pattern
mm-hmm.
than it does to just create the new pattern from the get-go.
Gotcha.
Which is like, I'm sure everybody's like, you know, heard it's like, it's easier to learn a new skill than it is to unlearn an old skill.
Yeah.
This is essentially kind of like the science and some numbers behind that quote or that statement.
I was going to say, it's like that quote where they're like, you can't teach an old dog new tricks or something, whatever
right.
that quote is.
Yeah.
That's a mindset, though.
You got to do it 10 times as much to change that old trick, right?
Yeah.
And so as we get, that's another form of restorative exercise. Now we're restoring a movement as opposed to before we're looking at kind of the joint
okay.
and then get, freeing up space and kind of making sure things are structurally aligned or whatever it might be, whatever. You know, everybody's, like you said, everybody's journey is individual. Everybody's
right.
body moves different. Everybody's kind of collectively created this form of movement throughout life, doing different things and maybe going through different injuries. So everybody's body moves differently. So we have two sides of that. So what kind of what we were just talking about with the restorative exercise, we have kind of restoring like joint function and joint movement and joint capability and room to move, freedom of movement. And we have kind of like that restorative side of creating motor programs that are now going to utilize, let's say, proper mechanics, that it's going to put less wear and tear
right.
and less stress on the joints that we might be targeting.
Right. The one thing I was thinking about when you were talking, because I know you're talking about certain movements and how individualized it is. For me, what I've noticed, and I think it's because it was after I became a mom, because everybody is either dominant with their right hand or their left hand, and then some people are ambidextrous. But do you find that a lot of the time what people are dealing with, like aches and pains and ailments, has to do with them just only using that one side and not balancing or switching off? Because for me, what I noticed is I was always holding my daughter on one side and the other side was bothering me. So then what I started trying to be more mindful of was making sure I was doing it on both sides, because the pain on one side was driving me nuts. And I was like, what am I doing? And then somebody was like, do you hold her on this side? And so I switched a lot of that. But you have to be so mindful of your movements throughout the day if you're just doing it with one side, because I think naturally we all have one side that's stronger than the other because it's our dominant side, right?
Right.
Yeah. So do you find that a lot of clients deal with pain or something because of either not moving properly or not having a balance within their own bodies?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, because people do notice pain, because things might be out of balance,
yeah,
being out of balance doesn't necessarily cause pain.
Okay.
So, like, as you mentioned, everybody is dominant on one side versus the other.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody, which means that we're not symmetrical.
Right.
And the body forms in different positions based off of us being right-handed, right? If we know that if somebody who's right-handed, you would expect to see a right shoulder that's a little bit lower.
Okay.
A right hip that might be a little bit higher, and the rib cage that might be a little bit rotated towards the left, because you're going to be favoring and using that right side more.
Okay.
That's a very, very common pattern to see in people who are right-handed. And just because you see that pattern though, doesn't mean that it's a dysfunctional pattern.
Okay.
Like this idea that we need to be even and straight and perfect to move well and not be in pain.
Well, it kind of,
that's not,
yeah, it kind of reminds me of what you were saying about like chiropractic care, like being imbalanced. So, yeah. And I was just thinking while you're talking.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's not necessarily bad. But if we do notice that somebody is in pain unilaterally versus the other side, we can look at what is different from side to side.
Okay.
And that oftentimes will give us some information,
okay,
that we can use to create a little bit more balance.
Okay.
Which might help somebody get out of pain. So, yes, you're spot on. People do notice pain because they might be out of balance on one side versus the other. But there's a lot of people out there who are out of balance, yet they're not in pain.
Okay.
And that's because naturally humans, you know, have probably always been unilateral in some aspect. Like we're not, I always say we're like, this idea of symmetry in the body doesn't really exist.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen those like, those things where they take somebody's face?
I was literally just gonna say that. I was just gonna say that.
And then like you flip those halves over, and yeah, they look similar. They look like they could be brothers, but they don't look like the same person.
Yeah, yeah. I remember seeing that, and I thought it was so interesting because, I mean, this is completely unrelated, but this idea of like perfectionism and everything has to be like lined up, and it's just, it, that idea, that concept is so alive and well in our society, and it's just not, it's not real life.
It's not. So no. Asymmetry is beauty, right? That's what people tend to think, right?
Yeah.
But
yeah.
In a sense, I understand where they're coming from, but at the same time, it's an illusion. Symmetry is an illusion. We're not symmetrical beings. I mean, we have a heart on our left side. We have the liver on our right side. That means that, and then the right side also has three lobes in our lungs. So the right lung is actually bigger than the left lung is.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Each breath that we're taking in, the right side of the diaphragm is working a little bit harder than the left side of the diaphragm is. The left side, right side of the diaphragm is actually bigger and stronger than the left side of the diaphragm is. So that's a daily, you know, imbalanced thing that we're doing, where every time we breathe, it's a little bit asymmetrical. And
okay.
So, you know, that's just kind of putting into perspective, like, symmetry doesn't exist, not in the human body, it doesn't.
Yeah. That's interesting. I'm learning new things, so thank you for sharing all of
For
these new
sure,
things with
for sure,
us.
absolutely.
So when it comes to your clients, is there, I know it's all super individualized to the person, but is there a like specific ailment or something that you see more often than not?
I mean, it's like low back pain is
Yeah.
definitely the most common thing that people will come and see me for, and it and neck pain. So I would say low back pain, neck pain, those things are very common. Now, because of my origination in fitness,
Yeah.
I still do work with a lot of people who are just trying to maybe become, lose weight or get healthier, or and that's actually a great point. It's like people who come to me to lose weight, I tell them straight up, it's like I'm not a weight loss coach,
Yeah.
but I am a health coach and I help you become healthier. Naturally, as we become healthier, we'll lose weight, but that's going to be like a very favorable side effect or very favorable byproduct of the other work that we're doing on. So I help people get healthy, as a result they lose weight.
Right.
But if we just focus on losing weight as like the main driver, we can actually sacrifice health and end up more unhealthy on the other side of things.
Yes, absolutely.
So when anybody comes to me and they say, because I'm a very muscular person, I stay very active, I'm very fit, I post a lot of stuff about workouts and things like that. So naturally, I draw a lot of people who say, "Hey, Isaac, I really like the workouts that you're doing, and I want to, I kind of want to do things like this and do things the way that you're doing, and I want to lose this weight." And I say, "Okay, let's just be very clear. I'm not a weight loss coach. If all you're going to care about is the number on the scale, I know people who do that, and I can recommend, I can refer out, but that's
Yeah,
not necessarily what I do.
that's not me.
Yeah, if you want to become healthier, feel better, move better, get stronger, then I am your guy, because I will help you with all those things. And guess what? As we do that, you're going to lose weight."
Yeah.
And so, yeah, just kind of to touch on that. But I also, so many people, almost everybody that comes to see me, they have some sort of idea of what they should be doing, right? They have an idea, and it might not be the right thing. But by the time they come to see me, it's like, "I have this idea of what I need to be doing, Isaac, but I just don't do it. I just don't stay. I don't stick to it. I don't hold myself accountable. Da 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 da." And so once you hear something like that, you realize it's not really a doing thing. It's not a doing issue. It's a mental issue,
Yeah, I was gonna say
right? At
that.
that point in time, that's a mental block. And how can I help somebody who knows what they should be doing? I'm gonna put quotes around that, what they should be doing, because a lot of people have ideas. There's a lot of information that I don't agree with out there on what people, quote unquote, should be doing.
Right.
But they know what they should be doing, or they have an idea what they should be doing to get them to their goal, yet they don't do it. Okay, well then clearly there's something going along in the mind that is prioritizing you doing things that you know aren't serving you versus doing the things that you know are gonna create the life that you want.
Yes.
And that's really tricky right there, right? It's
Yes.
like, and that's something that you don't really get prepared for, because you can create r rigid programs for people, and they might stick to it, right? But eventually, if you don't come into figuring out what that mental block is, it's gonna be really, really hard for long-term results. And I don't,
Yeah.
like I tell my clients, I don't care if you look good in a month. I don't care if you look good in 6 months. I don't care if you look good in a year. I want you to look good and feel good for 5 years, for 10 years, for 20 years. I want
Yeah.
you to create something that's gonna last, because if you reach your goals in 6 months, but in a year you lost it all, who cares? Who
Yeah.
cares that you reach your goal in 6 months? Because now you're right back in the same position you were beforehand. So we have to be able to set something up for what matters, and that is consistent long-term success. And that only can be done by shifting our mindset into thinking something differently, or having different views about what health might be, or what it is that they really, really want.
Yeah. I mean it all falls under like the same umbrella. Like everything is tied into your health. It's not just the physical aspect. It's not just what you're eating. It's mental too. It's mental, it's emotional. And I love that you brought up the piece about people having to decide that they're going to keep showing up and they're going to keep doing things, because That's the biggest thing. It's
Yeah.
consistency. It's showing up for yourself. It's making yourself and your health a priority. And I think a lot of the time people just fall out of that because, like what we were saying earlier, just how our society is set up and prioritizing other things and not really. I think our society, at least in America, is not. They don't prioritize like what your health actually is, especially with like standard corporate jobs. Where they are having you sit at desks for hours and on end inside and back-to-back meetings and all that. It's just once you step out of that, I think the word you use, paradigm, and realize that like I was saying this the other day, like we're basically plants, like, but we're humans. Like we need to be outside, we need to move our bodies, we need to have fresh air and sunshine and real food and all these things. And so if I love that you're opening up the whole discussion about health with your clients because it's so important. And for them to understand that, like you said, you're not saying I can fix you all, I can fix every single one of your ailments, and you're saying no, this is like a joint thing where I'm able to help you, but you also have to want to help yourself.
Absolutely.
It's
Absolutely. I mean,
huge.
that's the only thing that matters is that you want to help yourself.
Yeah.
You have to get into this for the right reasons.
Yeah.
And like an example of something like that is the person who wants to lose weight because they hate their body.
Yeah.
So they literally they show up to the gym to work out because they hate themselves.
Yeah.
So literally going to the gym is a form of self-discipline and
Yeah.
a form of kind of like self-loathing.
Yeah.
And guess what? Eventually, they're going to get tired of hating themselves. Eventually,
Yeah.
they're going to get tired of, disciplining themselves. And what's going to happen if exercise is a form of discipline for you, and eventually you're tired of like kind of like, being upset with yourself? Well, you're not going to go to the gym then, because every time you go to the gym, all you're associating with is, not liking who you are. And eventually, you're
Yeah.
going to want to love who you are. And so, at
Yeah.
that point, if you're working out for the wrong reasons, you're going to fall off.
Ugh, it's so layered 'cause I'm over here just thinking about why people have these thoughts about themselves and why they talk to themselves the way they do. And it's like that's also based on how we were raised and what was said to us as children and all these things. So it's like it's so layered. It's so
It
layered.
is. It is. Absolutely. It is. That's like, I think that's the exciting part of it, right? Is the healing journey, as difficult as it is, every breakthrough, every aha moment you have is just like such a release off your chest. It's like so
It's
much weight comes off your chest each time.
yeah, it's huge. It's and I think that's one of the most profound things about like your healing journey is like we're never going to be like magically healed one day. Like it's not just, okay, I'm
Sure.
healed. It's the
Sure.
process, it's the journey, and there's so many, like we were saying earlier, there's so many of these beautiful moments, beautiful opportunities where we can shift things. And I think it's really, really cool when you are witnessing someone else's journey and you get to see these things and then you're like, "Oh wait, I could do that." And it's cool. I love having conversations like this because we don't know who's going to hear it. We don't know who needs to hear it right now, and so I'm just thankful for your insight.
Absolutely, absolutely. And it's, I'm just trying to ask the difficult questions, to be honest with myself as they come, as the answers come about, and not really shying away from what comes up. It can be kind of scary when you ask difficult questions of what's going to come up. Everything that comes up, coming back to the beginning of the podcast, everything that comes up that might be a little bit darker, a little bit scarier, it's an opportunity, right? It's an opportunity for you to either crack through, break those barriers and become who you were meant to be, or it's an opportunity to just learn more about yourself. And nothing challenges you to get better than pain and tough lessons. That's just how it is.
I
Pain,
know.
my
That's like,
mentor, are you familiar with Paul Check?
I don't
Have you heard
know.
of Paul Check? So Paul Check
Maybe.
is a holistic health coach, and he's, my mentor, and he's the leader of the system that I teach. I'm a Check practitioner, and
Okay.
that is the avenue of holistic health that I teach. And, he always refers to the pain teacher, and there's no greater teacher in the world than the pain teacher. Now, do you need the paint teacher to learn? No. But if you don't, the only way to grow without the paint teacher is a dream. You have to have a big enough dream. So he has a phrase that he uses, and it's, you don't need a crisis to get better if you have a big enough dream. That's the only way. It's like people, like you said, people, their health, they don't prioritize their health until there's a crisis. So you either need a crisis to get better, or you have to just have a really, really big dream. And so obviously some people, with everything being individual, some people respond better to a negative, I'm out of luck. Oh, there we go. Perfect.
Gotcha.
Some people respond better to like a negative driver, and some people respond better to a positive driver.
Yeah.
Who you're gonna be different based off of who you are, but that's I try to focus on the positive side of things, and so a lot of work that I do with people is helping them to create their dream. And you'd be so surprised by how many people I say, like, what's your dream, and they just don't know.
Yeah.
Like, what is your dream? Like, what do you want in life? And they're like, I don't know.
I know.
I
Well,
don't know. So they haven't put any thought into it.
I mean, it's not like the norm for somebody to ask what's your dream. Like a lot of people,
Yeah.
like what you were talking about earlier, when you're like, I went to school for this, I had this job, and then I didn't end up doing what I thought I was going to do. I think that is that's the like pathway for so many people, myself included. And then you sit back and you're like, what do I actually want? And when you become crystal clear on what that is, it's so much easier to put forth and like take action and make it happen.
Absolutely. And we talked about those mental blocks. That's how we get past those mental blocks, is we start to focus on creating the dream. When we create the dream, we now have a vision. And when we take that vision and we put ourselves in that vision, we now have a version of ourselves that we're putting energy into. Right? And so once we have a version of ourselves that we can put energy into, this version of ourselves lives in our mind. But things that live in our mind, ideas that live in our mind, when we feed them the psychic energy of our thoughts, they come to fruition. They take physical form. I had to think about leaving my job, and I had to feed that enough psychic thought energy before it became a reality, right? And so that is the key to breaking through some of these mental blocks, these mental barriers. And I work extensively with my clients on all this stuff. I walk them through it. I have a lot of handouts, and we really focus on checking in and making sure that what we're doing on a daily basis is in coherence with that vision of ourselves that we created. That's like the first step of everything that I do, is I send people these exercises to get clear on what is their vision, what is their dream, and where do they see themselves in 5 years. And then once we have that, okay, so now I noticed that on your food log that we're eating Skittles every night before we go to sleep. Now, that version of you in 5 years, that version of yourself that you thought about, is that version of yourself eating Skittles every night before bed? No, it's not. Okay, then so we need to be making sure that we are putting our energy into creating that version of ourselves, as opposed to whatever, immediate gratification we get from, the Skittles and whatever, whatever comes through from those, that sort of feedback. And so it's all about delaying that gratification and creating the version of ourselves that we want. And it doesn't mean we're going to be perfect, and that's okay. You don't need to be perfect. It just needs to be consistent and showing up on a regular basis. Like, is somebody healthy because they have, they eat McDonald's every week, but or every day of the week, but then they have one, I'll say salad, even though I don't really like think salads are the epitome of health food, but it's easy for it to people don't know what I say when I say salad. We're talking about eating healthy. Is somebody healthy because they eat McDonald's all week and then have one salad? No. Is somebody unhealthy because they ate, clean whole foods all week and then had one day where they slipped up and got a pint of ice cream? No, that doesn't make them unhealthy. So there's balance we can find there. It just needs to be consistent and more dialed in and targeted towards that vision of ourselves that we're creating.
I wholeheartedly agree, and I love that you mentioned that piece about salad. We haven't taken a deep dive into that on the
Yeah,
podcast yet,
for sure.
but I love that you're including that in your work because I think that it's so important. And I know that a lot of the time, one of the bigger issues that I've had when it comes to like standard traditional doctors is that in their schooling they learn like 1% about nutrition. I don't know if that's going to be
Right.
changing at any point, but a lot of them have zero understanding of nutrient-dense foods and what your body actually needs. And so the nutrition piece, the mindset piece, the physical piece, like it's all tied into one. I love that you do that in your work.
It goes together well. Like
Well, it
every
goes
single
hand in
one of those,
hand.
yeah, every single one of those is powerful on their own. And you can get results on your own, but you just combine them together and you get that entourage effect where it's just like you put them together and the results that you get are just more, so much more profound than they would have ever been had you just focused on one or the other. And that was really my goal in learning so many different disciplines that I can kind of take and curate and create one idea of what it's going to use be used to further and help people like kind of along their journeys.
Well, your work is important and you're doing a great job.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate it. I'm trying. I'm always learning and always adding new things and changing what I need to be doing. Like I'm a student of it just as much as the people who are coming to learn from me are students of what I'm teaching. And I think that's an important factor in being a practitioner and being a coach is you have to continue to grow yourself. Otherwise, you're not really you're never going to be able to help people as at the capacity that you're going to be able to help people.
Well, I also think that it's important to be humble like that, to not say, I know it all. I know all these things, because we have to be teachable. We have to continue to learn, because there are certain things that I used to think were healthy that are just not even close to what I know now. So when you're working with people and you're teaching them these things, you also have to be teachable yourself.
I love that.
But we've had such a good conversation. I can't believe we've been talking for almost an hour.
For sure.
I wanted to see if there were any final pieces of words or advice that you wanted to leave listeners with today.
My mentor and the founder of the Czech Institute, Paul Czech, he says something that I feel like every good educator or every good mentor, every good coach says, and it's don't take my word for any of it. Don't take my word for any of it. Get out there and practice these things and find what works for you. Your whole life is an N of one experiment. We're in a very science-based age, and I love science. I think it's great, but it's not the end all be all. And let's say there is a study, that shows 80% of people benefited from doing X, Y, and Z. And so that means that we're just going to start to prescribe X, Y, and Z to every single person. Well, 80% is significant, absolutely. And that is, I would say, enough to like start to tell everybody about it. But that still means there was 20% that it didn't work for, maybe 20% that they didn't get the results as the other 80%. So if you're always just following the science and following what people are telling you to do, you might be missing out on your unique path that you should be following, your unique approach. So you got to get out there and you just got to experiment with it. You got to put kind of, you got to get in the driver's seat of your journey. And that is like the key to preventative, I think, and proactive medicine is it puts a responsibility on the patient to be thorough and be diligent in their research, to be open-minded and to experiment with all the things that they kind of run across. And from there, you'll all it, if you experiment and you are honest with yourself and you do the best that you can and you're always open-minded to new information, you'll always find the right path. Like you'll find the keys that you need to be focusing on to find the health for you. So that would be my last, final piece and words of advice. Just don't take my word for it. Get out there, practice it, live it, and find your truth. Find what works for you.
Go do it. I
Go do it.
love
Get out
that.
there.
So could you share where people could find you?
So I'm really predominantly on Instagram and I probably will be branching out, maybe getting into some new platforms. But right now, just Instagram. It's at Wildermuth Wellness. I love to talk to people, and I love answering questions for people. Like, if you have anything that you want to talk about or anything you're curious about from what we talked about today, or you just like want to tell me about your experience. I love to connect with people. So it's at Wildermuth Wellness on Instagram. Reach out, say what's up. And yeah, so that's kind of the predominant way that people can find about me. Wildermuthwellness.com also gives a little bit of a big picture idea of my approach and what I use and how I go about helping my clients to feel better, move better, live better, have more energy and vitality. So between those two, those would be the best ways of reach to find me. And you know, if you're on the fence about reach out, say something,
Just
say
do
hi. I would love to
it.
hear from you.
Awesome. Yeah, I'll include everything in the show notes for everybody, but I just want people to hear it.
For sure.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and for sharing your wisdom
Absolutely.
and your insights. It's been so nice to chat with
Yes.
you.
Yes, thank you for having me. It's been an honor and been a pleasure to talk with you. And it's always just good to see and talk to people who they're on the same path, right? And are seeing through kind of this blanket of, we'll say it, health, quote unquote, health information that's really not helping us get any healthier. So it's good to see people who are doing the work as well.
Yeah, it's really nice to connect. And I feel like that's how I've found most of my podcast guests. So it's really
Yeah, that's
cool.
great. I love it. I love
And
it.
also for everyone listening, we are going to have Isaac back on at some point soon. So stay tuned for that.
Yes.
And we will be back next week. Bye, guys.
Sweet.
Yay.
That was great. That
That
was
was
awesome.
awesome. Thank you so much for joining us this week, listeners. I really hope you love this episode as much as I did. If you enjoyed it, learned something new, or know someone you feel may benefit from it, please share it with them, whether you're posting it on social media, sending it in a text or an email. My goal is to open up these types of conversations within our society, within our families, within our friend groups. As always, if you have any feedback, questions, or know someone you think may be a great guest for the podcast, please connect us on Instagram at the Be Loud About What Matters podcast or send an email to beloudaboutwhatmatters@gmail.com. And if I haven't said it already, if you could please subscribe to the podcast, I would so appreciate it. And also leave a review if it's something that aligns with you and you feel like you want to learn more and you want to keep listening. Help us reach more people. I appreciate you all so much and can't wait to chat with you again next week. Bye bye.